Morning, everyone, or good afternoon. I'm Sharina Garcia, and I'm the Strategy and Innovation Partner here at WR Immigration. This is our fourth Chatting with Charlie, and I'm here with Charlie Oppenheim, and he leads our government relations group. He was the chief of the State Department's Visa Control Unit for 23 years, where he directed all numerically controlled immigrant visas. We're also joined today with Laura, our senior associate, who also discuss the issues that are on the top of mind of many of our global mobility managers. We can go to the next slide. Again, our legal disclaimer, this does not constitute legal advice. If you'd like to receive additional information or a consultation about your particular case, please contact our offices and we'll schedule a consultation with one of our attorneys. Just a little bit about our firm. Our firm is one of the top-rated immigration firms. We provide strategic client-centered services. We also have global immigration services and just some of our accolades on the top. And one of the highlights of working with our firm is our commitment to technology and our innovative technology, which we call RAPID. We'll move to the next slide. Again, I'm Sharina Garcia, Strategy and Innovation Partner. I'm here based in the San Francisco Bay Area. We have Charlie. So Charlie, why don't you give a self-introduction as well?
Thanks. Chief of the Immigrant Visa Control. And I made decisions to resign that's listed in the visa bulletin, also determined the various annual limits. And on two occasions, I applied before Congress.
And Laura?
Hi, everyone. I'm Laura Blanairs. I'm a senior associate with WR Immigration in our Santa Monica, California office. I practice employment-based immigration, and I specialize in counseling employers develop, maintain, and defend compliance programs for their immigration policies. My clients range from Fortune 100 companies to startups in a variety of industries like engineering services, finance, biotech, healthcare, and insurance.
Thanks, Laura. So we can move to the next slide where we're going to go through our roadmap. We're going to talk about the immigrant visa spillover. And then unfortunately, the April visa bulletin is not yet released. If it gets released within this hour that we're talking, then you'll get up-to-date information. We now have the State Department's annual report table 5, which we'll go through, and then prediction and trends in adjustment of status applications and consular processing, and we'll continue our common case profile for HR discussion. So Charlie, can you talk and explain to us about the immigrant visa spillover?
Sure, and we'll use the fiscal 2023 limits as reference. So what the State Department would do when determining the family-based limit, they would look at how many unused numbers there were from the 2020 employment category, and then any of those unused employment numbers from 2022 would be used in the calculation of the family-based limit for 2023. But since about 1998, calculation used employment numbers, those numbers have basically gone to waste. They're not added to the per country limit, and family limit has been the minimum of 200,000. And unless there's a change in the limit, in the future. For the inflation of the employment limit for fiscal 2023, the minimum each year is 140. Then state would look at how many unused family numbers there were in fiscal 2022 and add any of those numbers to the minimum 140. And state is already estimated will be there are approximately 57,000 unused family numbers from last year. So that increases this 197,000. it's a crisis of unused numbers each year.
Okay, so we'll probably see that in table five, but let's move on. So this is the visa bulletin. And unfortunately, this is the same as last month's because we don't have the April visa bulletin. So Charlie, can you talk a little bit about why there's a delay in the publication of the April visa bulletin, what the possible delays could be?
Sure, there's two main reasons. Beginning in early 2018, there was a change in the clearance required in ultimate publication of the visa bulletin. And once the determination of the case, the April dates has been made, the information is sent up for clearance. And then once it's cleared, that information is sent to the overseas and to the immigrants. And the State Department will not publish the visa bulletin until that has been done. So once the overseas post visa office will post the April visa bulletin. So it's possible during that clearance process, for whatever reason, that's been delayed. A delay could be, department is very concerned about the potential need to retrogress or make some type of corrective action in the second preference and or the third preference dates for either on a worldwide basis or for India or China. Therefore, they could wait until they have all the information and number use for the month of February and look and see how many numbers are being used in the early part of March. Respond with what they were estimating it would be. Then they could also get additional information from the Immigration Service on revised projections of how many numbers are likely used, for example, by Chinese and India's second preference coming, so that they may want to make a decision to have all.
So Charlie, you're coming in and out. So can I recommend you turn off your video and let's see if the sound quality improves?
Yes. And
all right. Yeah. So let me ask the question again. Let's see if it works out. Yeah.
Okay.
You could just summarize. Better? You could just summarize what you were saying.
Okay. Basically, the clearance process to notify the overseas post, that was changed in 2018 until the overseas posts are notified of the new dates, the April visa bulletin cannot be posted. The other reason is the State Department wants to obtain more information on number use through this time in March to determine if their previous estimates were correct and may impact their need to make corrective action for the month of February or month of April.
So what do you think we're going to see in April? We could possibly see some retrogressions happening?
I think that there's a good chance that there will be retrogression in one or more, or for one or more countries or rest of the world in the employment second preference category. And I think that, so people should be prepared for that rest of world second preference, China second preference, or India second preference will be retrogressed for the month of April. And if not April, most likely for May.
So we could see November 1, 2022 move backwards to a date before November 1, right? That's retrogression.
Right.
And then for China EB2, June 8, 2019 could either hold steady or go backwards as well. And then EB2 India, October 8, 2011 could retrogress even further or stay the same. So we don't have the visa bulletin yet for April, so we don't know. So we'll have to wait and see what happens. But based on Charlie's predictions, EB2 rest of world and China or India is either going to stay the same or go or retrogress, correct?
Correct.
Yeah. Okay. And then let's look at the next slide. So the Department of State finally issued Table 5, and Charlie's going to run through Table 5. So Charlie, why don't you explain to us, first of all, what is Table 5, and then we can go through the actual table.
Sure. Table 5 reflects the total number use on a worldwide basis. This is a very important table to look at because it gives you very detailed information on number use by preference category and by individual foreign state.
Okay, so let's look at Table 5. We go to the next slide. All right, so if we're looking at Table 5 worldwide, right, we look at fiscal year 2016 all the way through to fiscal year 2022. So fiscal year 2016 to 2020, we see this roughly the same amount of numbers, 140,000, 139. And then we see a big jump to fiscal year 2021 to 195 and fiscal year 2022 to 275. And then the bottom number is the actual annual limits. And you see that it normally stays at 140 and then it jumped up in fiscal year 2021 and 2022. So Charlie, can you explain this jump in numbers to us?
Sure. Because of the COVID pandemic, which began impacting number use primarily in March of 2020, the annual limits for employment were increased because, as I mentioned earlier, any unused family numbers are added to the employment limit. Most family numbers are used at overseas posts, and those posts were closed for a good period of time, resulting in all-time high annual limits for fiscal years 21, 22, and the current 2023 annual limit. Those were the past 3 years, including the current one, are for the all-time high in employment number availability.
So normally it's 140,000 available for employment base. Is that right?
Yes, that's the minimum. And I think going forward for fiscal 2024 and beyond, that the employment limit will be approximately 150,000, give or take 5,000 numbers. So again, what we have in the current year will be the last of the extremely high employment limits.
So for fiscal year 2021, if it's typically 140 to 150, there were an extra 122,000 numbers, it looks like. And then fiscal year 2022, roughly an extra 140 or 150,000 right. numbers. But that's only for these two fiscal years. So fiscal year 2023, when we look at Table 5, it's going to be a shift and a change? Is that what
yes.
you're saying?
Yes. Okay. For the annual limit, you'll see it'll be approximately 197,000. I think that number use should be in the 190,000 range.
Okay. So this is really a unique couple of years, and then it should probably go back to what we were seeing more along the lines of fiscal year 2020.
Yes, the expedited processing of employment first, second, and third preference cases for the last several years has been artificially inflated because of the COVID issues, and it will go back to more normal range beginning in fiscal 2024.
Okay, so let's look at the next slide and actually focuses on individuals born in China. Right. And so we look at that in fiscal year 2016 all the way to 2019. It's about an 8%, 9% usage rate, right? And the per country limits is roughly around like 8,400, 8,500. And then in fiscal year 2020, we see a movement of 11,383 for the numbers issued, per country limit of 9,384. So this actually goes down to 7.74%. But then 2021 and 2022, we see it go up to 10% and then 9.5%. So can you talk a little bit about how 2020 went down and then how it went up?
Sure. For 2020, the initial COVID impact was most heavily felt at overseas processing, but a fair amount of the China third preference numbers are used at overseas post. So those weren't being used. And it took a while for the immigration service to kind of ramp up and get things in operation back to higher rates of processing as they went through fiscal 2020. Then for fiscal 2021 and 2022, they had kind of gotten back up to speed in terms of processing the employment cases. And they were basically working at peak capacity, whereas the overseas posts were still, you know, suffering from the post closures.
But so fiscal year 2023, what will it look like, do you think?
I would say that it's probably going to be in the 14,000 to 15,000 range for China number use. This is more reflective of a return to normal.
So is this number use also for USCIS approvals as well, or is this just limited to consular approvals?
Yes, this is the Table 5 data, which reflects worldwide number use. And again, it is very positive China is using almost 10% of the numbers available to the employment first, second, and third preference category. So that's a very positive impact of processing in fiscal 2022, and it will be another positive impact for 2023.
So this is worldwide. So whether it's approved by the consulate or approved by USCIS, this is the number usage for China.
Yes.
Okay. So let's go to the next slide. Let's talk about India. All right. So we're looking at India here. So fiscal year 2016, we see a higher percentage of usage than China, right? So for 2016, about 13.92%. Then it jumps up in 2017, 2018, 15%. And then 2019 goes down to 12%. And then 2020, back to 15. And then we see a huge jump in 2021 to 37.86%. And then fiscal year 2022, 33.96%. So can you explain that as well too?
Sure. The increase in 2021 and 22 are reflective of the increased annual limits and probably many, many more India first preference and cases being able to be result in final action. And it's important to remember that on the employment number use, the Immigration Service does approximately 85% of the employment cases. So the fact that immigration for fiscal 21, 22, and once again in the current fiscal 2023, immigration is able to process at high levels without the negative impact, as much negative impact of the COVID implications. And this almost 34% of the numbers available being used by India is a very positive thing. And again, shows why so during fiscal 2022, so many more India first, second, and third preference cases were being processed than in previous years. It will be somewhat the same type of ratios for this year. But again, it's important to remember that starting in fiscal 24, then processing will be declining to more normal rates.
So if I add up the China and India percentages of number usage, in 2021, China and India made up approximately 47% of the worldwide usage of numbers.
Yes.
That sound pretty typical. And then the prior years, it was about maybe like 20%, if I add, or 20 to 25%. So why the huge jump?
During those years, the Immigration Service was able to process many, many more employment first and second preference and third preference cases. I have to wonder if that was somewhat at the expense of processing of rest of world cases, and that fact may have resulted in the rest of world second preference being having a final action date this year. Again, did the Immigration Service process more of the India and China cases last year, and they built up a backlog of rest of world cases?
So you told us before that when there's overflow numbers, when there's extra numbers, it goes to the person with the earliest priority date, right?
Right. So there were excess numbers. There were otherwise unused numbers in the first, second, and third preference categories under the annual limits. And then those numbers could be then made available for use by Chinese or Indian applicants based strictly on the priority date. And in most cases, the Indian applicants have the very earliest first, second, and third preference priority dates. And therefore, they're going to be able to greatly benefit by the use of otherwise unused numbers on a worldwide basis.
So theoretically, right, let me just do this theoretically. If you have a huge backlog of applications, then you're probably, the USCIS or the US consulates are going to be looking at the oldest priority dates. And that usage is usually going to be individuals who were born in China or India.
Yes, and mainly India. And that has allowed India second preference to use tens of thousands of additional numbers in recent years. The same thing in many cases for Chinese applicants. So again, Indian applicants were being processed at a faster rate because of higher annual limits and the availability of unused otherwise numbers under the annual limit. And for example, if the annual limit last year was 80,000 numbers, and applicants from the rest of world and China were only going to use, say, 60,000 of those numbers, then that would allow an additional 20,000 numbers to be used by Indian applicants.
Okay. And then for fiscal year 2023, are we going to see similar numbers for India?
I don't think so, because the State Department, because they've imposed dates on the India and China employment first preference to limit number use, they don't believe that there's going to be as many otherwise unused rest of world first preference numbers. That is the reason they imposed the date. They have imposed a final action date for rest of world in employment second. That means that at this point, they do not believe there are going to be any otherwise unused employment second preference numbers. So both India and China will be limited to the per country limit in employment second preference. That situation could change, but it will impact the availability of numbers for India and China second. And I think it's what's leading to the retrogression of both of those dates and potentially the worldwide second to control number use.
And we're only in the fifth month of fiscal year 2023.
Right? Yes, it's a very interesting situation. Again, the imposition of an employment second preference on rest of world applicants is, considering that category has been current for so long and the record high annual limits in recent years, it kind of makes you wonder why there is suddenly a backlog of rest of world applicants where there are waiting lists that weren't being identified in the past, or has there suddenly been an influx of filing by rest of world second preference applicants?
Okay, so only time will tell. So we'll have to wait and see in the April visa bulletin. All right, we can move to the next slide. All right, Laura, we get a lot of questions about what's the process look like? Why is it taking so long? How come my perm isn't filed yet? So can you walk us through the green card process?
Yeah, absolutely. We did get a lot of feedback from clients and from registrants wanting to know more. So recall, the slide is somewhat similar to what we talked about yesterday, drawing out the car analogy and describing the road to green card in the US. So most commonly, the employment-based green card process starts with a company sponsoring a foreign national employee through labor certification process or the test of the labor market. And that process we'll dive into on the next slide, breaking down the various steps and the timeline for each steps. Once the Department of Labor does certify the application, you move into the immigrant petition stage. The immigrant petition stage, again, is filed with USCIS, and these processes are all filed regardless of whether the foreign national employee is in the US or based out of the US. The visa bulletin, it serves like a traffic light because the only way the foreign national employee gets to move forward with the green card application, whether in the US or processing overseas, is based on what's known as the priority date. So when Charlie talks about the visa bulletin, it's basically the schedule of those priority dates based on country of birth and when the foreign national is eligible to move forward with the final step of the process. We're going to talk a little bit more today in detail about the sort of micro steps when processing a green card in the US, or should you choose to process the immigrant visa overseas.
So green card in the US, if we want to use our immigration terms, is called adjustment of status or AOS, right?
Right.
Okay. And then processing overseas is what we usually say consular processing.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah, we're just trying to use broader terms to bring everybody on board here.
Yeah. Okay. We can go to the next slide. So why don't you tell us about the typical processing times for the first two stages?
So that labor certification or the test of the US labor market, we break it down into three milestones. The first is the prevailing wage determination. This is where the company discloses all the information about the offered position to the Department of Labor. So they describe the title, the location, the job duties, and the minimum requirements. They complete this application, the prevailing wage request, with the Department of Labor, and the Department of Labor issues a determination. The determination effectively codes the position into an occupational category within the Department of Labor's occupational library, as well as assign it a wage level, 1 through 4. So wage level 1 is entry level, and level 4 being expert in that occupation. Unfortunately, it's taking 7 to 9 months for these determinations to be issued, so quite lengthy.
So can you file a labor certification without a prevailing wage determination?
You cannot.
So we have to wait until the government issues these. And can I expedite this? Can I pay a fee? Can I do anything to expedite this?
Unfortunately, there's no premium processing or expedite fee you can pay. The Department of Labor works on a first in, first out basis, and the timeline would only be adjusted if Department of Labor brings on more resources to process cases faster.
Okay, so right now we're really stuck at 7 to 9 months.
Correct.
Okay, that's bad.
Bad news. The second milestone in the process is the recruitment and resume review. So we put a range here. Statutorily speaking, recruitment must last at least 60 days. But of course, any resumes or of applicants of US workers who apply for the position must be reviewed by the company. So there's some time we estimate that the company representatives will go through those applications to do diligence as part of the process.
So prevailing wage and recruitment together, if I add those two numbers, it's at least 9 months before I can file. Is that right?
Correct. Yeah, at the sort of fastest, it would be 9 months, correct.
And then 12 months, 9 to 12 months is typically how long it takes to file a labor certification.
You're right, just to file the PERM labor certification application is taking about a year.
Okay. And no way to expedite, you said.
Correct.
Okay, I have to ask.
Yeah. No, we answer these questions all the time. I know that you answer them too, Sharina.
Yeah, that's why I always repeat it. No way to expedite. How about if we contact our senator? Is there any way to expedite?
No, not this process, unfortunately.
So I have to wait.
You have to wait. Okay. And then once filed, the labor certification applications, again, are taking 8 to 10 months. And again, no calling of a senator, no premium processing fees. It's taking 8 to 10 months
for
the Department of Labor.
So you're basically telling me, Laura, that for the labor certification stage, it's going to take me at a minimum 17 months. Is that right?
Yeah. The range here is 17 months. to 23 months. Yeah.
17 to 23 months. And have I locked in my priority date at that point?
You lock in the priority date when the PERM application has been filed. So in that, at soon as 9 to 12 months, you lock in the priority date. That's the day that you file the PERM application.
Okay.
The one thing I do want to sort of mention here is this is a best case scenario timeframe. This does not include any prep time, which for many reasons can be delayed if there's company restructuring, layoffs, turnover, new job changes, you relocate, you know, the foreign national employee relocates. For various reasons, the process can be disrupted, has to restart for many reasons.
Okay.
So the takeaway here, and we talked a little bit about it last month, is that we want our HR or companies to take into account that estimating about 3 years to secure an I-140, and we'll talk a little bit more about securing the immigrant petition approval, but we want to make sure if the company is sponsoring green cards through the labor certification process to assume that it takes 3 years.
And that's not including the priority date waiting period, right? The visa bullet.
Correct. That's assuming securing the I-140 immigrant petition approval.
So if my employee only has 3 years left on their H, I should start their green card process in their third year of H? Is that
that's what exactly you're saying?
Right. Okay.
Exactly right.
So is it going to get better?
There's no indication that the Department of Labor is increasing resources. There's no indication of Department of Labor resources to support faster processing times. The other side of the coin is if there are less applications filed. Now, given the headlines we see of layoffs, potentially there could be fewer PERM applications filed, which may decrease processing times.
And then I've heard that the DOL has been denying cases. What's that all about?
Yeah, it's been a crazy few months. The Department of Labor had been denying cases erroneously with an inconsistent adjudication trend based on a specific question 10HB, which was effectively how companies were representing whether they would accept employment experience and alternate occupations. So very in the weeds here, but that's all to say, big picture, Department of Labor was inconsistently and erroneously denying applications for probably 3 to 4 months. And just yesterday, they announced and acknowledged that this was an inconsistent adjudication plan. So check in with a WR immigration attorney to address your concerns with filing a request for reconsideration immediately. And any cases that are currently pending should not be subject to the inconsistent erroneous denials.
Thanks. All right, my labor cert's approved. What happens next?
Fantastic. You move into the immigrant petition form I-140. This is, again, filed with USCIS. Now, gratefully, thankfully, we can file with premium processing. So once the immigrant petition is filed with premium processing, the Immigration Service will adjudicate the petition in 15 business days. Regular processing has a pretty dramatic range here, 5.5 to 21 months. So obviously great benefit to file premium processing. The timeframes that I'm quoting here are for labor-based immigrant petitions. So I do want to notice the difference because there's going to be different processing times for immigrant petitions if you're filing with an EB1 for extraordinary ability, for example, or a multinational manager. The regular processing and premium processing times differ.
Okay, so if I'm an EB1, then I don't even have to do the labor cert. I go straight to immigrant petition. And if I'm an EB2 national interest waiver, I go straight to immigrant petition. I don't have to go through the labor cert process.
Exactly. And one thing to keep in mind with those EB1s is both the foreign national employee and the position both must qualify for the EB1 sponsorship. So we get the question a lot of, I'm a manager in my US role, can I be a multinational manager? And there's further analysis that you'll need to check in with your immigration counsel to analyze.
Okay. So my immigrant petition, I can file that. And then if I'm in the US and my date's current, I can concurrently file the green card. So let's move to the next slide.
Yeah, exactly. We wanted to break down the sort of micro steps of what happens when you are eligible to file the green card in the US. And we call this adjustment of status or form I-485. So when you're eligible to file the green card in the US, sometimes you can file it concurrently, like Sharina said, with the immigrant petition. Some of us have to wait until the priority date becomes current for filing to file the green card in the US.
Okay. And then can you walk us through the timeline?
Yeah, so this again is a range and some cases may vary, but generally speaking, this is what you should expect. About 2 to 4 weeks after you file your adjustment of status application in the US, you should get a receipt from the government. About 5 to 8 weeks after filing, you should expect to receive an appointment notice for biometrics. Biometrics is when you check in with a USCIS office to take pictures and fingerprints. So that would include both the principal applicant and any dependents they've filed with, like spouse or children. 5 to 10 months after filing the adjustment of status application, you hopefully receive the employment authorization document and advanced parole combo card. That's what the EAD AP stands for. And this permits the benefit of work authorization and travel as a green card applicant. In 10 to 14 months after filing the application, you may receive an interview request. Now, some interviews are waived. Clients where we always see interviews are when there's any arrest or any inconsistencies with previous immigration filings. So you'll want to be communicating closely with immigration counsel if you have any criminal history or have any inconsistencies in any of your filings. And then ideally 10 to 18 months after you file your application, whether it's you received an interview notice or not, you receive an approval. The caveat here is your priority date must be current for final action to receive an approval for a green card in the US.
Okay. And how about if you want to process overseas? What's the
process? So we can go to the next slide. So a lot of sub steps that we thought we'd walk through. Essentially, after the immigrant petition has been approved, USCIS sends that petition to the National Visa Center, known as NVC. And that can take 2 to 4 weeks for that process to occur. Once NVC receives the immigrant petition, it will send the foreign national employee basically an instruction letter to create a profile online for future communications for the process to unfold. When the applicant, the foreign national employee in this case, their priority date is within the application filing date, NVC starts this checklist process, basically instructing the applicant to pay the fees, complete an online visa application, and submit, scan several civil documents. So these will include birth certificates, marriage certificates, police clearance letters, and we put here in an all other, any other required documentation that NVC may request at that time. Go to the next slide. So once all of that's submitted, this is done online, NVC will acknowledge that the application has been documentarily qualified. We are seeing some pushback here, and I know Shireen and I had a conversation that often we call this the checklist challenge, where folks will submit their documents and NVC pushes back on the completeness of the documentary qualified. So this can often be a challenging submission process. But once NVC deems everything has been received properly, you're considered documentarily qualified. They're then going to work with the consular post for an immigrant visa interview scheduling. Now, there's not a specific time frame of when this happens or an average of how this happens, because it's going to depend on a lot of factors. It's going to depend on your priority date and what's happening with the visa bulletin. So if you're becoming current for final action, it's going to depend on immigrant visa scheduling availability at the consular post in which you're scheduled or looking to schedule with, depending on their availability and resources there. Once your priority date, the applicant's priority date does become current for final action, NVC does schedule the visa interview appointment at the specific consular post. There are some pre-interview preparations that every applicant must do that we've outlined here, the biggest being schedule and complete a medical exam. This is required for every applicant, so you're going to have to schedule that in the country where you're scheduled for interview, register for the courier service, and then gather, again, all the documents for the interview. You'll attend the interview, the applicant gets their immigrant visa approved, and they must pay a USCIS immigrant fee. And when they enter the US, then the green card is mailed to the applicant within 30 to 90 days.
Okay, so you've walked us through the adjustment of status and also the consular processing. So let's go to the next slide. And let's go back to our hypothetical of Frank. So Frank's an Indian national. He's held H-1B status since 2009. He has a priority date of October 23, 2012. His initial I-140 was approved as EB-2 in January 2013 with Banana Company. In October 2020, Banana Company files an I-140 EB-3 concurrently with their adjustment of status application. On July 14, 2021, the EB-3 petition is approved, and then the adjustment of status remains pending. So basically, Frank has filed a downgrade. So he had an EB-2 approved, date wasn't current, then he did a downgrade because EB-3 became current. And then on March 15, 2022, Banana Company filed an I-45J to request that USCIS transfer the basis of Frank's pending application, which was at under EB-3, back to EB-2. So he went from EB-2, EB-3, back to EB-2. And then in June 2022, Banana Company promotes Frank. He holds a senior leadership position. He's now managing a team of junior and mid-level team members. In July 2022, his team is growing globally, and Frank approaches HR and says he wants to qualify for EB1 multinational manager. So he asked Banana Company to assign him abroad to work with Banana International Company for 1 year as a manager. So as of August 2022, Frank has been employed with Banana International Company in Dublin as a manager. So a year later, in August 2023, he will now qualify as an EB1 because he's been physically working as a manager internationally overseas, and Banana Company is willing to sponsor him for it. So Laura, can you walk us through this hypothetical and what happens next?
Yeah, this is the one from last month, so you might recall it for those on the line. And for here, we wanted to prompt this in an effort to sort of highlight that Frank can process overseas his immigrant visa, even though he has an adjustment of status on file related to his EB2 that's still pending. His priority date under EB1 will be immediately current for final action. And so he's got this unique opportunity, again, because of Banana International Co. supporting him in a managerial role outside the US for a year, to immediately file for the green card overseas. That'll kind of depend on how long he and the company need him overseas for. As we outlined, the process can take some time to unfold, even though Frank's priority date is immediately available for final action. Does Frank want to be in Dublin for the processing? So he has that opportunity to process that immigrant visa abroad so that when he's ready to come back into the US, he can come in as a legal permanent resident.
So
that's one of the things we wanted to highlight. Yeah.
So Laura, if he a consular processes abroad based on the prior slides that you provided to us, he could premium process his I-140 starting in August of 2023 because he meets the 1 year, right?
Exactly.
Okay. And it's 45 days for premium processing. So probably by October 2023, we'll say he has an approved I-140 under EB1 that he's designated for consular processing, right?
Exactly. Through Dublin, exactly.
And then when he consular processes in Dublin, it's still going to take, just looking at your prior slides with processing overseas, at least, no average or standard scheduling framework. So how long will it take him to be interviewed in Dublin, do you think, and get his
green card
if he decides to consular process?
That would largely depend on the consular host resources in Dublin. So we'd want to look carefully at that, should Frank want to pursue that opportunity. The other option he does have is to interfile again on his pending adjustment of status, the upgrade to the EB1. Now, generally, you have to be in the US to file an adjustment of status, but because his adjustment of status was filed back in October of 2020, he's already met that obligation. So he has some unique opportunity here given his lengthy processing history.
Okay, so let's go to the next slide and let's talk about the pros and cons of processing in the US, adjustment of status versus processing overseas or consular processing.
Yeah, I think generally we recommend our clients to process the green card in the US. The biggest and strongest pro is that the applicant receives an EAD and AP card, as well as portability after 180 days. And so what that means is these are significant benefits to a green card applicant. Again, EAD and an AP card hopefully gets in your hands in that 5-month timeframe as opposed to the 10-month. So it has some travel benefits as well as work authorization benefits, and that you can transfer your pending green card or port it to a new employer so long as you're working in a substantially similar position. So you have mobility after about 6 months. So that's a huge benefit for processing the green card in the US, which you do not receive if you consular process or process the green card overseas.
Okay, so can you talk about the cons and the pros of consular processing?
So the pro here is that if you are based outside the U.S., that you can enter the U.S. as a permanent resident, so you don't have to apply for rounds of, you know, visa extensions with potential, you know, travel delays or things like that. So again, this is pretty unique in that, you know, the situation or the hypothetical we just discussed with Frank, this would be a great benefit. Frank could just enter the U.S. As a green card holder or legal permanent resident.
But based on what you said, Frank has basically an adjustment of status pending and he can also consular process.
Correct. Yeah, he has a unique opportunity to choose.
Okay. So this is the situation where we talked about how this is a crash, right? Because he's got an EB2, an EB3, and now an EB1. Right, Charlie?
Yes. And for state processing, they're going to only consider him in one of those areas. So they're going to process them in the most recent category they were told about, and they will not switch lanes until you tell them the new lane he's eligible for.
Okay, so the lane he will switch in finally will be EB1, and it'll most likely be consular processing because he's in Dublin. So at the time the consular post interviews him and deems he is eligible, is that when they will get, when the EB1 number will be pulled?
Yes. So the State Department, if he is scheduled for an interview in Dublin, say for the month of March, then Dublin would have a number waiting for him, and that number would be used in during March and deducted from the overall limit. Two things I would point out that are very important to remember if somebody is considering overseas processing is to submit all of the required documentation as quickly as possible, because they will, until they're documentarily qualified, they would not be scheduled, even if their turn had come up. The other thing is I would warn against, because of this time of uncertainty on visa availability, if an applicant is scheduled for an interview at an overseas post, they should make every effort to attend that interview and not reschedule for a later month. Because if they reschedule, if they had an appointment for March or April and they try to reschedule it for sometime in the summer, the date that applies in the summer would be regarding their date. They may not get their visa if the category has retrogressed.
Very good point.
So unless there's a really absolute requirement, attend your initially scheduled interview. And also, if you by any chance are refused in that month, return with any documentation to overcome the refusal in the month of original interview.
Okay, so for Frank, he started this process in 2013. That's his priority date, right? And so now it's August 2022, and he's done an EB1 premium processing, right? So basically, his prior date's October 23, 2012. So 2012. So theoretically, Laura, by 2024, if he proceeds with the EB1 route, he should have his green card.
Correct.
Right. So it took him 12 years to get his green card.
Yes.
And had he stayed under EB2, he probably would still be waiting. Is that what we're trying to say?
Correct.
Okay. And had he stayed in EB3, he would probably still be waiting as well. Right.
That's an interesting question. We did see some of our clients who for various reasons were unable to do the downgrade filing in October 2020. Some of those folks did get approved as EB3 by not sort of moving or changing lanes. I can't recall what priority dates were moved through, but we did see some clients who did not do the downgrade actually have favorable experiences in EB3?
Well, right now in March 2023 visa bulletin for EB2 India, they're processing October 8, 2011. And then for EB3, June 15, 2012. And then EB1, February 1, 2022. So he definitely would have gotten his green card for sure under EB1. And then under EB2, I can't remember the date now. I think he would still be waiting because he's got an October 23, 2012 date. So he'd still be waiting under EB3 and then most definitely waiting under EB2.
Correct.
Yeah. So in this scenario, EB1 did make it faster for him to get the green card.
Yeah, absolutely.
Absolutely. Okay. We have 3 minutes left. So why don't we go through some of the questions we received last time? So Laura, can you tell us about the current perm processing times and are there plans to speed up the perm process?
Yeah, so as we walked through in the previous slides, the range for perm is 17 to 23 months. So that's tough. That's tough processing times. There are no plans that the DOL has alerted us to about increasing resources. If there are lower applications filed, we could see processing times go up because there's just less work for the DOL to do. One thing a company can do is recruit during the pendency of the prevailing wage request. Again, that would only cut out about 2 to 3 months, so it would save some time, so not insignificant, but the large portion of the perm processing times are the DOL adjudication timeframes.
And can you speed that up by paying a premium processing fee?
You cannot.
Okay, for the fifth time that we're saying this. Okay, this question I don't really understand, so maybe someone can explain it to me. An employment category unused country cap visa transfer to other country in same category or transfer to same country in lower category. So Charlie, do you understand that question?
Yeah, I think what they're getting at, each of the preference categories has a annual limit on a worldwide basis. Just to make it easy, say the limit is 40,000 for employment first preference. There is per country limit as well. If the rest of world number use will not require that 40,000 limit to be reached, the rest of world adding the India and China number use, if there's still gonna be unused numbers, those number unused can be made available to countries which have reached their annual limit, being China and India, and therefore they can go over their normal per country limit. So the numbers would first go within the category. If there are still unused employment first preference numbers, as there was last fiscal year, those numbers, unused first preference numbers, can be dropped down to the employment second preference category, increasing the overall employment second preference limit.
Okay. We're at time, so we can move to the last slide or second to the last thought slide for our next chatting with Charlie. So one more, yes. So the next one is scheduled for April 19th at 11 a.m. Hopefully we will have the April visa bulletin by then and hopefully the May. So we will do predictions about the April and May and look at the trends at that time. So thank you, Charlie and Laura, again for joining me on this webinar. And we'll see you again next month.